Okay, next is Patty. Can you hear me? Hello, hello, can you hear me?
Hello? There, can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, my whole back of my neck is hot right now. This issue of these raises, I've been on the Finance Committee since January. I never heard any of this. It was a surprise to us when we found out that bonuses were given to the management and that the supposedly the chair of the board last year had agreed upon this. We were, to my knowledge, never apprised of this. And to me, a 6 months amount of money is quite a bit of money just to pass by the Pacifica National Board and in an unbudgeted expense, and now we're in the position we're at now to lay off workers. I think that's really something. I don't understand. I agree with Dave. I don't understand why we bother to approve budgets or anything if there's no correlation between the spending and the budget. And I'm curious, who manages the managers when they're overspending? I mean, is there any kind of, the people all overspent but were still given good reviews to be given bonuses? I think that's what I just heard. So I just want to make that point. And aside from Otis McClay for 6 months, extra personnel that were given money, I'm sure they're over just Otis McClay. I you know, in the inspections, there was many expenses discovered, a few discovered anyway, that to me seemed that they probably shouldn't have been spent, that we could have done better by having already an HR director that was taken out of the budget without board approval when we hired one, and we have incurred many legal expenses this year due to not having anybody minding the store there. So that's kind of feels like it's not a very good decision. I would wonder who made that decision. Was that by yourself, or was that with the former ED to decide not to have an HR director? That's another question I have. And this one thing, I've said it before, I'll just say it again. Mail drops outside the listenership is a policy change in the foundation. We are listener-sponsored. And to go outside the foundation and to raise money outside without a board policy and board approval and over budget by these hundreds of thousands of dollars, no matter what money came back, without that being in the budget and returned through the budget and a projected forecast of income, makes me wonder, why do we have a budget at all? And again, I'll just ask, who is managing the managers when they're overspending? Whose job is that to make sure that they're, you know, not hiring and not overspending? Can you tell me whose job that is?
And Lonnie,
thank you.
I just want to note, just quickly, Lonnie said, has explained in the past that that the adjustments were made because they wanted to get to the 1 month. But with respect to who did that, is that you, Lonnie? Was that Dan who decided that?
Well, in terms of postponing a hire, is that what you mean?
That was one of Patty's questions.
Yeah. As I mentioned, on the national programming person, it was postponed by the board. The second on the HR person, that HR hire was postponed because it was necessary to have the 1 month and make the budget balance.
And she asked who decided that. Was that you or was that Dan?
Well, in that particular position, I presented it to Dan. I said, this is the only thing I can think of to balance this budget. He agreed.
Okay.
And in the end, it's that person reports to him. So in the end, he agreed.
And Patty, did you catch her other questions, Lonnie?
Oh, well, there were a lot of them. But the whole question,
The question I asked was, who is in charge of the managers or follows that they don't overspend? I mean, is there an oversight mechanism or just an after-the-fact mechanism talking about that they overspent? I'm just trying to understand that. management style?
That's a good question, Teddy. That's an excellent question. And my answer is that we in Pacifica, in instituting this new bylaw system, because the question to me is, who's accountable for managing the finances of this network? Who's responsible? Now, it's interesting that you get different answers to that question based on what the question is. Some people say, well, no, it's the LSPs that are responsible for the budget. They're the ones that control it. Others say, no, it's the CFO. He's responsible, especially when something goes wrong. Others are saying, well, we evaluate the GM because the GM is the one we're going to hold responsible for locally. And still yet, people will say, well, it's a national office that's supposed to manage all the stations in this area and every area. No, some people say it's local control. These issues have not been resolved. Now, if we are focusing now on the national office and it's overspending, then I think that's a false concentration. Every station has line items where they've overspent, especially in salaries. We need, then, a national policy about monitoring and controlling expenses. Now, if the Finance Committee wants to make me a CFO and give me the control to control these line items, you bet I'll do it. But that means that I have both the responsibility and the authority and accountability, and I would need the board to state that clearly. I'll be happy to do it. I'd be happy to say no. Salaries are out of control.
This is Sandy Stack.
I'd be happy to do that. So anyway, the answer to your question is, who is in charge? It's a good question. And we have not answered it clearly at Pacifica.
Right. Thank you, Lonnie. Casey. Wait. Before I go there, Patty, are you willing to go on, or did you get the answer to your questions?
You can go on. I think can't really get the answer I'm looking for. Thank you very much.
Casey?
Thank you. Teresa asked quite a few of the questions that I had, but I wanted to kind of flesh those out a little further. I'm on the freeway, so I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think, Lonnie, what you said with regard to those raises was 100-something thousand and then 139,000 salary and related, which and then I'm hearing several terms. I'm hearing bonuses, I'm hearing merit increases, and I'm hearing cost of living adjustments. And so I want to be clear about exactly what those were, because, you know, at the beginning of the year we were told there were bonuses. And is that separate from the cost of living adjustment? Was there a bonus? And I don't have a problem with bonuses and cost of living adjustments as long as there's a process for approval and all of that. I just want to understand what they were and how, because we don't have a line item for those, how those are put in and what the related expenses are that were different from the salaries.
I think the bonuses happen in December around the holidays for everybody, I think.
Okay, so those would have gone in on the salary line item?
Yes, on the salary line item, and we'll probably show up in January.
Okay, so I would suggest we put in a line item for bonuses if we decide to put any money in there.
Yeah,
that's separate from salaries.
Yeah,
and then, so what are the related expenses?
Well, related expenses will cover things like consultants. We consider taxes, health benefits.
Okay, but so when you did the cost of a living adjustment, you went back and you gave additional benefits related to those adjustments?
Well, the way it works...
Retroactively?
Yeah, it's the same thing we do with the unions. The unions will be in negotiations for 6 months, and when they finally sign a contract, they'll have a retro part of it where people don't lose income for having had to sit out the contract negotiation process. So, yes. So are there, you know, health benefits you pay retroactively? Well, no. It's mainly the taxes.
So the taxes are like a real small percentage. So it seemed like the related stuff quite a bit. It didn't seem the same percentage. So I was trying to figure out if bonuses, the one-time bonuses, went into the related, or whether they were. But you're saying they were in the salaries.
Yeah. One-time retro we talked about was $22,000, and then
one-time,
that was one-time expense.
Okay, the one-time retro.
Yeah.
$22,000 in salaries or in related?
In salaries.
In salaries. Okay.
Yeah. And so that was the one-time deal. You know, it's not like a tremendous amount of money you're talking about.
Okay, and so if it was 20, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but if it was 22,000, then that leaves 107,000 that was, what were those, salary increases? Were those, what were those? $107,000.
Well, what's the question, though? You said, what's in the variance? That's the question.
Well, I still don't understand what, you know, at first we were... the first thing you said was that we were talking about increases because, you know, staff had done a great job and they had pulled us out of a financial crisis and they were deserving. And then you said it wasn't a merit increase, that it was a cost of living adjustment.
Let me just try to break it down.
Okay.
Let's see what's in the 9,000, right?
I think
that's 7. That's what I'm projecting by September 30th. That variance will be. All right, let me try to break it down. 22,000 of it is going to be the one-time retro. Then you have about 17,000 that will be part of the payout to our former executive director. Remember, I'm projected these expenses.
22, okay.
Yeah, I projected 17,000 for our former executive director. When he leaves, you have to pay him.
Right.
And so then you've got 10,000 that's going to be the HR person, which we have said we need to do.
Okay.
And then you have another, I think you picked up Otis, we picked up a particular contract person for 6 months that we had added into the budget. And, you know, we had this fellow, John Mellish. Remember, the board was very, very clear they wanted him to be paid out of the national office. That's $1,000 a month. Over a six-month period, unbudgeted, and then any other severance amounts, so it adds up.
Right. Okay, so when we go back to the bonuses and the whatever that was retroactive, I still don't know if it was a merit increase or a cost of living adjustment.
Cost of living, to be clear.
Is that it was cost of living. Okay,
yeah.
So then we don't need to talk about what a great job the staff was doing in relation to that money, because I think that is going to, that comes, that, you know, when you mix the words up, that's what comes back and gets people confused and upset.
Well, that's what I wanted to clarify.
Okay, good. That's what I'm trying to do also, is just clarify to make sure we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
So if that cost of living then, that whole entire amount you're saying was 22,000.
Yeah. No.
And that
one-time retro was 22,000.
All right. The one-time retro.
Yeah, it was 22,000, and then the ongoing cost of living, which is part of the salary.
Right.
What did we do? 3.5%, I think. And I think at the time, I think I said it to the Finance Committee too, that we need a mechanism to reward our management people just as we do it with the union people. And it may be that we want to look at cost of living increases for management staff over and above merit increases.
Okay.
Otherwise, you just this happens again next year. You just neglect.
Right, of course. So the COLO you're saying was 3.5%?
Yes.
Cost of living. Okay. And that's separate from the bonus, the one-time bonus
that's
also.
Correct. So that happened. And
how much was the bonus?
1.5%.
1 to 1.5%.
Okay. Yeah, fairly small. We didn't have much cash. We were still trying to raise money, but we were successful.
Okay. I'm sorry if I'm being too detailed, but I think what happens and what gets us all confused, and then some people, you know, get riled up, is because we keep changing words and phrases. And so I just want, you know, I want us all to use the same words so that we know what we're talking about, and then, you know.
That's a good point.
We're kind of clear. So now I'd like to move over just for a second when we were talking about us being over 82,000 on governance and that board at some board meeting costs, just for a second. In that, my understanding, which I didn't know before, was that our stations get billed back for some of the costs. For example, when our GMs go and their travel and their hotel and stuff gets billed back to the station. So,
well, it doesn't quite work that way. The stations, if you look, do have budget travel budgets, most of them, for their GMs.
Okay.
It's just that we pay for it in advance.
Right.
And
that's what the bill back is.
And then we bill it back.
That's the bill back. Okay. Yeah. But it still comes out of the station's budget,
right,
not the national.
So right, and they budget for it.
So the $82,000, is that over and above what stations might be over, and that's just national?
Well, it's most of it was driven by a very expensive board meeting in New York.
Right.
Which was $25,000 over budget. And also, you know, conference calls cost money. And then, you know, we have 10 or 11 committees we're trying to maintain.
Okay, so a lot of this is conference calls also.
Well, yeah, you got, you know, the detail is broken
right
out there in that budget. You can see what's meeting, what's conference call, what's...
Right. One of the things that's been, you know, difficult for us in trying to do our budget is that our line items don't really match our operations. And that it, then it makes it clear or difficult for us to understand clearly, you know, what these costs are. For example, we have, you know, one line item that would, might say governance. And, for example, you're saying $82,000 in governance. And it would be helpful. I know that it, you know, it's a lot of extra coding. But I also think that that would help us to avoid misunderstanding if we really make sure that the budget clearly indicates through the line items what it is we're spending and what it's for. Because people hear $82,000 and they think, oh, how many people did you fly to New York? But really what you're talking about are a lot of conference calls, a lot of things like that, and we don't know.
Well, you know, part of what drove up the cost of government. Now, if you look at that budget, there is a breakout, travel meeting, what have you. If people need detail on that, we can certainly give it to you. And Kay did ask for it and did receive that breakout. But you remember, some of the decisions that are made, people don't think about the implications of the cost. Like, why did they go over on the board?
Right.
Fine. Well, remember, we wanted LSB chairs to attend the board meeting.
Right.
Cost, add $14,000 to the cost, because now you have extra hotel. Now you have extra plane.
But Lonnie, did the LSB chairs, did they go to the New York meeting? That was the one that was...
They went to two other states, so...
But
know.
Did they go to the New York meeting? Because it was the New York meeting we were told was 80.
No, I'm saying aside from the New York cost, there are other things that drove up the cost for board meetings, such as having the LSB chairs come.
Okay.
That's five people times two trips. They think it came twice. Well, what did that cost?
And did those get billed back to the stations?
I'm not sure, but I'm not sure how that was handled. But you also meant that we had board training and consultants. But over and above that, let me just add one other thing. Part of the reason that New York thing was so expensive is there was an extra day added. When people say we need to come to the board meeting early, they need to understand how much that costs. Not to mention the fact that the hotel says, wait a minute, I don't have rooms for an extra 30 people, thank you very much. But you have an extra day. That means people are coming earlier. That means that the hotel, you've added a whole extra day for 30 people. There's some people want to stay and come even earlier than early and stay later than late.
I'd like to move the discussion if we could. Casey, were you done?
I just have one more thing, and that is,
and that
has to do with the process for going outside of budget and oversight. And you know, Lonnie agrees that we need that process, and I'm just wondering if we might get to a point today where we have a motion and pass a motion, so that you know, from today on, we know that at a certain amount outside of budget, that there needs to be authorization.
I don't think we can do that today. We're already behind our agenda, and it's not an agenda item. We can put it on the next agenda, but I'm concerned that we can't. We could kick it to a working group if you wanted, but I don't think we can go through formulating something with that many implications on this call right now. Would it be all right if we did that by assigning it to the working group that's dealing with the budget crisis, since oversight was part of its charge as well?
That's a different subject.
Yeah. I think it's a different matter, too.
Okay, well...
I'll put it together a motion and propose it to the group. And
great,
then,
thank you.
Okay.
Lonnie, this is Patty.
Hang on just a second, Patty. So I was next on the stack, and I need to get to this before the next discussion, which is I was looking at your summary projected versus budget for the year. And this is how much short of or on target we are for a one-month surplus by September 30th. If you sum all the numbers up, or one-month operating reserve, you don't like the word surplus. If you add the surpluses that we will have, the operating reserve that we will have from PRA, the National Office, AKT, and W, you come to $1,023,000. WBAI is going to be short, actually short, according to this projection, $255,000. So if you put those together, you come to about $750,000 in the bank, according to your projection at the end of the year. Now, the monthly costs, according to your spreadsheets, total expenses for the network per month. That was just picking me out of the hat, but let's see. Total expenses run $1.1 million. Is that correct?
$1 million what, per month?
$1.1 million in May was the total expenses consolidated for the whole network. $1.16
million. Let me read it. Of May, probably going to be actual expenses $1.168.
Right, that's the number I'm seeing. So what I'm not understanding when we're talking about our current budget crisis and the immediate need to raise money is that it's clear that we're going to come in, based on your projections, even if no additional fundraising is done other than planned, we're going to come in with only enough money to get us through 3 weeks of October, assuming no fundraising. But what it looks like is, with that much money, that's how much money there is after we've made payroll in September and everything. So I guess what I'm not understanding is why pulling the drive forward, say, 1 week into the third week in October so we get, you know, our credit card receipts from half of what we raised doesn't solve our cash flow problem.
Let's see if I'm understanding your question. First of all, the $1.1 million that you were pointing to did not include central service costs. You must do that as well.
And well, why? Well, they've already paid their central services.
No, not in that construction of the spreadsheet. That's different. That's an extra expense. That once you pay your operating, then you pay your central services.
Okay, but the total expenses are still the network spent $1.1 million.
Oh.
And
as
we're going to have $750,000 at the end of September by your projection, even if nothing else happens.
Oh, let me say that the $1.1 million, to that you have to add central services costs, which stations have to pay, in that case, in the month of May, $530,000.
Lonnie, if no money's being raised, there's no central services due on money. The central services have already been paid when that money was raised. It is not a dollop on top of it again.
Well, yes and no. For even though I raised the money in May, and I'm paying central services on what I received in May, then I'm paying central services on what I received in April, and so forth. So you are paying central services according to how much funds you bring in from a drive that may take 3 or 4 months to...
Okay. I'm just going to have to disagree with you, and we'll leave it there, but what I will say is that doesn't create a cash flow problem to anybody on payroll or anybody external, because the amount of money that we spend is $1.1 million, and we have $750,000 projected already in the bank by the end of the year.
Wait a minute. All right. This will create confusion. So let me go over it. You can't look at 1 month at Pacifica and thereby conclude that everything is okay. No, you can't do that because stations after a drive look like they have millions of dollars, and they do. But the issue is that If I, like Kay, am spending, I don't know, how much you guys spend, $350,000 a month, and I only have $750,000 in June, I have a problem.
That's your projection for the year, Lonnie, not June.
For the year
consolidated, you were saying the network will have in the bank at the end of the fiscal, after everybody's been paid, the network, around the network, will have a total of $750,000 in cash. So I'm trying to understand, where is our cash flow crisis?
Okay, well, let me try to answer it that way. If you, as a network, only $750,000 in cash at September 30th, speak of until way late in October, you need, as this budget points out, $1.5 million. About, that's only half of what you need. $750,000 wouldn't even last K for more than 2 or 3 months, not to mention the entire network. That's not very much money.
We've been told that in September, bills will fall that we can't pay. And what I am seeing is that around the network, we can pay it. And moreover, in October, if the combined fund drives of just the fundraising in October around the network is about $3 million, okay, then the credit card receipts on that, even if they're only 40%, cover the cash flow problem. And we have other fund drives coming in February. So where is the cash flow crisis coming?
Well, this is talking in very general terms that you cannot get to. What you have to do is, have you been to each station and talked over their cash flow with them? Well, I have. It's not true, Dave. You just can't make a general statement that everything is okay. It's not okay.
I believe it's not okay. I understand we have a lot of structural problems. What I'm asking is, we're told there's a cash flow crisis that the network reserves are incapable of meeting. And I don't see that. Maybe someone else on the call who's more expert than I can give a whack at this.
Okay.
This is Jane. I can't help, but I do want to let you know I have to go offline for about 20 minutes. I'll come back.
Okay. We'll be waiting. Okay. Lonnie, if you have anything more for me right now, I feel I should go on to Sandy and then Patty.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Sandy?
Yeah, hello?
Yes, go ahead.
You know,
can you hear me okay?
Yeah,
okay, good. I don't know if I was muted or not. Lonnie, I'm really failing to understand a couple of things in principle. I am all for paying our management more money. I've repeatedly said that we paid them too little. I really fail to understand, considering our situation money-wise, and I don't know the timing of the raises and the BAI shortfall, but we were at best planing even and perhaps even going under from time to time, bobbing along here in this year. How tell me again, how is it that we decided to give cost of living increases in mid-year, given our situation, without board approval or at least consensus from the board? I'm not blaming you, Lonnie. I'm just asking for an explanation as someone that may have been there all along. Thank you.
Okay. Let's take that into two parts.
Okay.
Why would you do bonuses in the middle of the year when you may or may not have the cash?
Wait, Lonnie, just to be clear,
he didn't say
bonuses.
Happy to be corrected. Cost of living. Right?
That's correct, yes. Thank you.
All right. Happy to be corrected. Well, because if you go back to that period, we were raising considerable sums of money at the national office. It looked very good. And that turned out to be absolutely true. Were those raises affordable? Yes, they were. Are they affordable now? Yes, they are. So that doesn't mean that, well, what was not foreseen is that other stations would have a huge shortfall in this amount. $200,000 maybe we could have handled, but $40,000. So it was unforeseeable. That is why I do believe we need to increase, if anything, the reserves that we have for each station so that one bad drive doesn't put us into a tizzy like this. Now, authorization and question. From my point of view, and for what I saw our ED do, he did get authorization, did announce to the board. If you look at your board packets for January 2005, you will find 15 pages of comparative salaries and his direct statement that he would be doing cost of living. And he talked to the board chair at that time and announced it. and I announced that I would be putting it into the forecast here in this finance committee, and I forecasted it to show that it was affordable. So the idea that all of this was unknown, I just don't agree with, you know.
No, Lonnie, he's not saying unknown. He's asking notifying us that you're doing it is not the same as an authorization.
Oh, don't speak for him, Dave.
Well, no, go ahead. I concur with Dave. Thank you.
There is no authorization process in place in Pacifica for KAI other stations.
Well, Lonnie, I mean, how are these affordable in light of the fact that we had this, I'll call it an oops, for lack of a better word, in our fundraising? And yet, you know, we talk about projections, we talk about careful planning. It doesn't sound to me like either of these follow those guidelines. It's having your cake and eating it too. Now, that's all retrospect, and I think it would be very important that we establish some guidelines both for spending outside the budget and for authorization over certain amounts by the board. I just think this is critical. We've changed our ways at Pacifica. We have this democratized format, and unfortunately, it's my perception that up and down the network, we have managers that want to run the network in a traditional style, and that starts with the money, and it goes deeper than that, and there's a disconnect there, and it's leading us to this conversation. Thanks, I've taken up enough time.
I agree. What I want to do is let's put our money where our mouths are on this. That is, you must give clear authorization to control the expenses of this network. I am happy to do it, but you want authorization from the board? Yes, I do, and I would propose the motion. Yes, I am happy to do that. I will control the expenses of the budget of this network, but I don't, and I need clear authorization to do it and clear support. So if I'm hearing that there is this need, I am responding to it by saying, let's do this. I am the chief financial officer, and I'm perfectly happy to say any station, whether it's authorized by the LSB or the GM or this finance committee, should not be authorized to overspend any budget, and I should be empowered to prevent that. Now, when I say that kind of stuff, I get a lot of silence in the room. Now, which is it going to be? Is it going to be control of the finances of this network, which I will happily do, or is it going to be a case of fragmented authority? No one's clear about who's got the authority to do what. So I'm happy to place a motion before this finance committee and the board. I did. I placed a motion before the board in New York in March 2003, a motion that said, the CFO and the ED have the right to refuse any expense exceeding 2,500 variance from the budget, whether it be from the board or anyone else. That motion failed. I did place another motion before the board that no motion of the board itself, the board too has to watch its expenses, should be passed without the financial implications clearly being spelled out and the source of the funds being identified. So, is it going to be this kind of clarity that we need and real control? And so what I promise to do is I will place before this finance committee, and if it fails in this committee, I'll take it directly to the board, that we need control of our expenses, especially in this time. And I'm not placing myself outside of it. I am just asking for the authority to move ahead on it for any unit, station. And I'll be happy to do it and be held accountable for it.
Okay.
This is Casey.
Casey, we have to move the agenda. We've got Patty. Casey, can you do it quickly after Patty?
Yeah.
We've got to get now to the other stuff.
I understand.
Okay, so go ahead, Patty, and then Casey.
Okay, this is Patty. Can you hear me?
Yes.
You can hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. That muting thing, it doesn't say over and over again. Okay, well, first of all, I just wanted to say that as far as these, I wanted to get back to the thing about the board expenses and everything. I'm actually what is charged back to the stations is not only the management hotel and flight, but also all the room rentals, including that of the administrative council, being up to $10,000 for that gets split between all the stations and the national office. So it's not just the hotel. I mean, it's not just the general manager. It's all room expenses, like the where the room meeting is being held, the internet, the food. That's all charged back, all of it. As far as the rooms, you know, Lonnie mentioned that you know, people want longer. Well, who decides that someone can stay, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days at $150, right? In the same city that the meeting's being held, someone is staying a week, has a hotel room. Who authorizes these things? This is not something that we know about. This is comes from the national office allowing these things to occur. We had someone had the bright idea to have a demonstration on Monday in Los Angeles and let everyone stay over. This incurred, you know, several thousand dollars as well. And the admin council meetings are charging, were being, those aren't being charged. I take that back. But the after ones are. And then I just have to say, well, you know, there may be some case you could make for the spending of the stations going over and that you have no control over that, but there's nobody overseeing the national office except yourself and the executive director. So when that goes over in these kind of over expenses and hirings and different decisions and legal expenses and legal expenses and legal expenses, well, I don't know if there's anybody else that can take responsibility for that. So I'm not really sure. How would you police yourself if you were given the authority to police yourself? That would be any different than you're doing right now in policing yourself. Thank you.
Oh, how would I police myself? Oh, well, I'll give an example, Patty. And right now, our budgets are going through the LSPs. And question is, what are they doing with these budgets? Some of these LSPs are putting $12,000, $15,000 money in the budget for themselves. I find that objectionable. Because there's no one to...
Lonnie, this is not responsive to the question of how would you exert oversight over yourself.
Over myself. My oversight is going to come from... it's going to come from the Finance Committee reviewing and doing the careful variance analysis each month, and ultimately, the board.
We get the variances 2 months after they've happened.
No, that's not true. Because each of the income statements forecasts future variances as well, where each one of the stations are going to be overspending, not just where they overspend. So that's why I do the forecast as a warning. What I think should happen, if you want my ideal, is that at every board meeting, every station, including the national office, every critical variance ought to be discussed at the board. Not in just in finance.
So you're saying that your oversight would come at this board discussion?
That's right, because you have to publicize what's going on.
Okay. Casey, and then we need to get on to the working group report.
Thank you. I just wanted to respond to Lonnie's, Lonnie, your proposed process for oversight. And to say that I also would like to see a very clear process for oversight and agree with you there, but I feel that the proposal that you have where you're saying as CFO, you will take control of all of the budgets and you will put a stop to spending is the exact opposite of listener governed. And you know, that's difficult for me, and what I would like to see this process, and if you want to, you know, work on a motion together so that we can come to some sort of a compromise to present to this committee, I would like to see the exact opposite. I would like to see that, you know, any expected expenditures outside of budget first go to boards and committees, and that they stop them, and, you know, rather than you. And it seems to me that in some ways that also helps to protect you from these kinds of, you know, accusations that this stuff and that if we're talking truly about listener governed radio, which I thought we were, you know, your process is not that. And so I hope that we can come to some sort of a compromise, or so, you know, really be clear that it's the committees and the boards who are truly making the financial decisions, and you know that they're being followed.
Well, that's a bylaw change. That would be a bylaw change, but
I don't believe it is a bylaw change. And you know, I know that you know I've been asked to keep this short, and so I will. But you know, when we've both suggested bringing motions to this committee, and you know, if you'd like to work on one together, that we can kind of come to some sort of agreement rather than have dueling motions, I'd be real open to that.
Well, I would love to do it, but those bylaws are not irrelevant here because
they certainly aren't. I mean, okay. David's asked us to move on.
Yeah, we'll do that as we thrash out that motion.
Just one point of information. I'm looking at this January book, Los Angeles Sportsman's Lodge Hotel, and I cannot find any records of any notice of the CFO or the executive director saying a word about any financial increases or anything. If you could direct me to the tab and the page, I would appreciate it, because I'm not finding it. I'm looking at every page. I could be wrong, but I don't see what you're talking about at all. So if you could do that, unless it's in the 15-year, you know, going between 1990 and 2005, and it's stuck in there someplace. But if it's not in there, I don't see it. I would like to know where exactly it is then, please.
Well, I have it in my hand right now. And it's, let me see, the date may be a little bit off. This is, I'm sorry, it's dated March. And it's a board packet that says Pacifica Financial Development and Personnel Data Report.
Oh, yes, that book, yes.
Has 10 items in it. And it has a discussion on, you know, everything from inspector rights. And it has 20 pages of CPB salary report for public radio stations, and a memo from the executive director stating his intent to move forward on the salary issues. It's in that document. I have it in my hand.
In tab number 8? What tab?
Well, it's actually tab number 1. And 31st payroll. This data contains the name of all individuals paid by the station or Pacifica unit that month, including their positions and the amounts paid. Item down before it says, I, as executive director, authorize holiday bonuses after consultations and recommendations from CFOs, department heads, the chair of the board. Budget guidelines and past practices were followed. He did not include himself. He said, goes on to say, senior supervisory staff who did not receive a pay increase last year were paid bonuses, and he talks about the bonuses. And then he
2% annual salary, not 1 or 1.5%. It says.
He didn't end up getting it. It ended up going down exactly that way. So anyway, so that.
Wait, but Lonnie, well, you haven't read anything about him telling us that he had the intention of giving a raise, unbudgeted raise.
Reading again from that report. Alas, please note, I do not consider bonuses to be adequate substitutes for pay increases. Given the fact that senior staff have not had increases over the last 3 years, the average salaries of union staff have increased over 12% over that time period, I will be making position adjustments and modest pay increases for management staff following the latest round of performance.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, it's there.
That's what we were looking for.
Okay, but did you say following the latest round of performance? So these were not cost of living adjustments. They were merit increases.
There you go.
Both.
Is that correct?
Did both. You actually didn't give anybody the same cost of living. Okay.
Okay, we need to get to the working group.
Oh, so it was.
We can revisit this next meeting.
All right.
But we've already let this go over. I mean, that is what.
Fair enough. Let's move on.
Is there any other point that somebody feels is absolutely necessary to make right here, right now, on this point?
You know, on Friday, I signed checks to get them out of here. If they're, I hate to do that to you guys, but I got another half an hour or so, then I got to run to the bank because I actually got checks for WBAI that have to go out.
Okay. Then we need to get to the budget crisis fundraising plan from the working group. Lonnie, you were the organizer of that.
Hello?
Yes?
May I ask one quick question?
If it's not about the working group report.
But you said if we don't have another question.
No,
Lonnie,
I said if you have a key point you need to make right now,
I was on mute. Lonnie, what's the name of the employee that you said would send me, like, the cost of the PNB meetings for the last six or so meetings?
Lynn Magno.
Lynn Magno, M-A-G-N-O?
Yeah, she does that work for us.
And that's
L-Y-N-N. L-Y-N-N, last name Magno, M-A-G-N-O.
All right, thank you.
All right. So, Lonnie, go ahead with the working group.
Marnie joined me and the working group, and I want to thank you folks, by the way, because that was not easy work to try to identify viable options in order to bring back to the ones. We held two meetings. One was with the working group, and the other included our general managers, all of whom, I believe, made the call. In intense discussions and trying to look at all the permutations, several ideas were placed on the table, one of which and I'll just give the three, and members of the committee can chime in. One of them was that if we are looking at a cash situation in September, what is an appropriate remedy? Proposal. Identify a bank, get information on what opening up a line of credit might be. In some amount, $500,000 to $750,000. A line of credit is different than a loan because a line of credit merely allows you to borrow the money on a short-term basis if you need it, and then you don't have to borrow any fixed or set amount like you would with a loan. We came away where I and Marnie were to look into what kinds of loan might be available to us and what the information might be. We did so. Hey, Marty, you want to take it from there? Or?
Just if you want to break from talking.
That would be good.
But we spoke to Wells Fargo today, which has the loan on KPFA's building, specific at KPFA's building, and they talked about a 7.25% interest rate, I think it's 1% above prime. So we just chatted a little bit, and we've made a connection, and that's a good thing. Whatever we do or don't do, that's fine, but it never hurts to make connections, especially in the banking business where we're already banking. And we also talked about trying to lower our banking charges. For instance, we spend almost $350,000 a year on bank charges, and a lot of that has to do with credit card processing and lockbox fees, and we can do some efficiencies in our banking. So Lonnie and I kind of had fun exploring that today, and then we're also going to be looking at Bank of America. We're national banks, and that's it.
Just to be absolutely clear, they can have a line if we choose to go that route ready in two to three weeks. I read 4 weeks, should we need it. And to be clear about the intent, I think it is wise and prudent if we have a situation as a network where cash flow is an issue or payroll, God forbid, is an issue or paying the bills is an issue, having the availability of the line subject to board approval, subject to guidelines, subject to rules around who and how it can be used, is prudent to have in place. Most organizations of our size do have a line of credit, especially one that has such seasonality in revenue as we do, because long periods where there's little or no revenue is exactly why you need a line of credit. We haven't done it before, but I am saying now we will need something like that. So anyway, that would be the line of credit recommendation.
Lonnie, before we go off of that, I just want to ask a question to Ambrose. We heard earlier that the board was notified of an intent to do something by the executive director and that that was considered equivalent to authorization. I'd like to know from Ambrose, what do you consider at this point is the board's role in the securing of such a line of credit? Do you feel that as executive director you can do that without a board motion, or do you think it requires a motion of the board?
I think there should be a recommendation from this committee to the full board, and the full board ought to approve it.
You say ought to. Is it your opinion that you would be authorized to secure that without board approval?
No. But let me tell you something. Dave, you know I've been trying to get this for a long time.
Right.
This is the only nonprofit I've ever been involved with that didn't have a line of credit. I had one 40 years ago with a community action agency. And here you're doing... And I got that even though we had just begun the agency. Within 6 months, I had a credit. Here we've been in business all these years and never had a line of credit. It makes no sense. You cannot do business, keep doing business this way.
Okay.
So I think the full board ought to, as I tried to get them to do last year, act as we are. We are a business. The board ought to go ahead and authorize this to take place.
Okay, well, as long as I just wanted to be clear on that board authorization would be needed to move forward. Go on, Lonnie.
Yeah, but let me tell you, read your bylaws. Read them very carefully. Read what the powers of the executive director are. Didn't have to do it.
So you're clarifying that this is a choice on your part as to what
it's
you
my
think
choice.
Is appropriate.
So if you believe in a community radio, if you believe that the people ought to make decisions about their future, then how can you not do that? That's the reason I tried to get the board to do it before.
Great. Thank you.
Jack.
Yeah, after Lonnie, is it relevant to this point before we go on?
Yes, it's relevant, I believe.
Please go ahead.
Concerning a line of credit, and given that we're a business, we're not a very well-run business, not with the kind of cash shortfalls that we have. It was mentioned earlier by Lonnie that we haven't replaced our listenership. Our listeners are aging. We're not drawing more money. All this says to me that without radical change on the expense side, we're giving I'm going to use the analogy since I have two of them, teenage boys' credit cards. Uh-uh. Come on, folks. I don't think this is the prime option here. And we've survived this far in our history without a line of credit, and there's a reason for it, and I don't think this is the time to go turning over the Monopoly cards and mortgaging our future.
Is that our role, to survive? What is the responsibility of a board member? To enhance value of the corporation on which they serve. Doing poor mouth and not planning for the future and for its financial independence is contrary to our responsibility.
Ambrose, are you sure? I think our mission, our charge is to see that the mission of the foundation is fulfilled, not necessarily to enhance the value of, for example, the assets of Pacifica.
How do you do that, Dave?
Well, it's a philosophical question, but I would say that a board member's role has to constantly change depending upon the position of the organization and what it's dealing with. And when you're in great times and you're very prosperous, and then you look at how you're going to grow. And when you're not in great times, you have to look at how you're going to survive and how you're going to get back. And
you're saying,
you know,
well, you know, the issue of the mission, and I read the mission with a financial eye, I think the second point in Lou Hill's statement on the mission was that every unit at Pacifica should be self-sustaining.
There's no mention of every unit because there weren't every unit. To maintain in a manner as nearly self-sustaining as possible.
And it mentions unit. Certainly does.
All right. Self-sustaining is not a line of credit.
No, well, that's true. But that's true. That's absolutely true.
Well, we do need to have this discussion at the point at which it comes necessary. But why? I'm regretting interrupting at that point. I think why don't you put forth the recommendations of the working group
now,
and
let's
we'll
get that out.
Deal with them.
All right, that was the first one, and we see that people have different opinions on it. As I say, I think that's prudent and wise to do, because otherwise it's gambling, in my view, that we will be okay when we clearly have indications that we won't be okay and need some gap funding. It does not mean we neglect the long-term solution. Of course, we move to long-term solutions, and that's what we need to talk about, too. All right, second point. The recommendation was to synchronize the October fund drive start dates between the five stations, such that they on the air drive for purposes we have yet to really, we don't have a theme yet, but it's like a rainy day appeal or some other theme. But it would occur 2 days in the beginning of the October drives or 2 days at the end of the October drives. We did not rule out that those drives might have also a special premium that Dave had presented to us with a proposal where we would have an MP3 premium, which Dave probably can explain better than I can, and that could be part of that two-day drive at the beginning in October or at the end in October. It could be a separate on-the-air mini drive in early December, we also discussed, where, you know, gifts and the holiday spirit would be an appropriate sort of venue to look to raising funds. That was idea number two. I'd have to state, though, there was some considerable discussion on that one, and some of the general managers liked it and some did not. Feeling that would be disruptive of their schedule. Some folks say, well, that's too late to help me. You know, idea number three was as a companion piece to do a mailing from the national office to raise rainy day funds and to also raise money in that mailing for the archives. That would occur in September. Since we were going to do one in September anyway, the idea would be go ahead with a mailing, acquisition mailing, except for the archive piece, and raise $500,000 that way, such that funds that we were going to utilize, in this case it was going to be a national office drive, that we would utilize those funds to offset any issues at the station level, and of course any issues at the national office level, because we're impacted here as well. So the three ideas, just to summarize, get a quick line of credit, because it may be that by September it will be obvious that it's going to be needed by some station or whoever. Idea number two, synchronize two-day on-the-air drives beginning or end of October. Idea number three, just to summarize, in conjunction with the October or the short-term line of credit, do the mail drop in September anyway. So it's none of these are exclusive.
Lonnie, I didn't hear in there the idea of a nationwide fundraiser on air in September. Wasn't that one of the proposals? Or did I not hear you?
Well, it was brought up, but I did not hear resolution on that issue. I proposed it. But I didn't hear resolution. That doesn't mean we can't bring it up. But yes, September was not ruled out. It was discussed. But I don't know. I don't know if we actually resolved on the on-air thing in general, because there was some disagreement around whether to do it or not.
But Rudy had asked you on that call for what is the absolute, you know, what do we need? What is the needed amount for the absolute, you know, requirements, not anything elective. Is that correct, Rudy? Was that your question?
Well, my question was, I know one of the issues that I know we were charged with coming up with was, you know, for lack of a better word, the strings that we're going to attach. What were the expectations, especially as around WBAI, in terms of us getting this kind of support? What expectations are there from a budget point of view or operational point of view that was going to go along with the support that we were going to get? I know that was one of the issues that you know, folks were saying, well, listen, we're not going to throw good money after bad. We are willing to help WBAI, but they've got to do, which never was articulated. So that was one of the concerns that I wanted to kind of focus in on, was that. But I also have a second interest is just getting more. I mean, some numbers have been tossed about, but I think we need a more detailed analysis. I don't know if it has to come from the from each station who's going to get this kind of support, or if it's going to come from Lonnie. But just in terms of really solidifying the numbers and what's behind the numbers, the needs of the various stations that are going to benefit from the rainy day fund. So it was what are the strings, and then really getting some more detail in terms of the needs was my two concerns.
That's a good question. Well, strings first. I think Mark mentioned some of the strings, and they were not, fully articulated because couldn't do it in one call. But they would be things like reorganizing, say, WBAI over some period of time with a plan to reduce their cost structure to the point where they were going to have revenues meet expenses. That would be one that I think, and there are, as you know, one or two plans that Indra has looked over. So I guess the performance objective there would be to assure that implementation was going to occur around some plan. The second level of performance would be payback, which is to say agree on how the monies will be paid back so that budget would have to demonstrate the capacity to pay back. It's now another budget item, and you want to have that clearly included in any new budget that the station might produce. So those two are the main ones that popped to mind for me on the issue of how much money are we talking about in terms of need. Taking it as a worst-case scenario, which I always do because people always are more optimistic than I find many times actually occurs, I would say that WBAI, even with the drive that they have going now, even with the $400,000 or $425,000 that they will raise, which is more than they thought they would, they're still going to need between $150,000 and $200,000. That would be the first start. I would include our KPFT in terms of cash flow issues. In that range, I think I said before, for 30 to 60, on a worst-case scenario, just preventing. Doesn't mean you have to use the funds. It's just that if that need occurs, then we have done our due diligence and have a plan B in order to meet some of the needs. WPFW, talk with Ron and Robert West in terms of what their needs might be at the end of September. And it looks like somewhere around $67,000.
For what?
They will be short their 1 month and want the need to cover their expenses in October. I'm not seeing an issue on cash for K at this point. I'm looking at the national office